This is the Australian Broadcasting Commission bringing to you, direct from the floor of the National Parliament, the proceedings of the House of Representatives. This is the first time in history of this Commonwealth that the regular day-by-day proceedings of Parliament have been on the air. We're broadcasting from a soundproof booth that's been built into the chamber of the House of Representatives. For those who know this chamber, the booth is situated on the side towards the King's Hall, and as I look across the chamber, I look straight towards the Speaker's chair. In passing, I might mention here that the Speaker's chair was presented by the United Kingdom branch of the Empire Parliamentary Association. The royal arms above the chair are carved in oak from the timbers of Westminster Hall, London, and the armrests are of oak from Nelson's flagship Victory. This is the last session of Parliament before the general elections, and the government has a number of important bills to bring down before the session ends. The session opened 3 weeks ago, but just let me give you some idea of how Parliament meets. The sitting of each house is preceded by the ringing of bells for 5 minutes. Those bells ring throughout Parliament House. At the same time, red lights show for the Senate and green for the House of Representatives. Red and green are the two traditional colours of the House of Lords and the House of Commons. Each house follows the same procedure at the beginning of every sitting. In the House of Representatives, after the Speaker takes the chair, he reads prayers while all members stand. The procedure is then for the Speaker to ask members if they have any petitions to present. That's a very rare possibility. Next, the Speaker calls for any notices of motion, and following that comes question time. And those are the questions without notice, meaning that the questions have not previously been printed on the notice paper of the day's business. Now, I've mentioned the Speaker. He is the presiding officer in this House, as the President is in the Senate. The name Speaker is handed down from the days when the holder of this office in the House of Commons was the one to speak to the King on behalf of the House when any occasion arose. The Speaker and the President are in supreme control of Parliament House. Well, the bells have been ringing for some time. The members are now entering the chamber and taking their places at the benches. The Clerk of the House, Mr. Frank Green, is at the table. Also the Clerk's assistant, Mr. Tregear. The head of the Hansard staff, that's the parliamentary reporting staff, Mr. Romans, he is at the table, and also the shorthand writer. The parliamentary reporting staff is known as Hansard. Maybe a little muddling for you, but the name comes from Luke Hansard, a man who used to publish records of debates in the British Parliament. The debates here are recorded by shorthand writers, and the name Hansard is still used as reference to the reports. Well, soon the sergeant-at-arms will enter the chamber, bearing the mace on his shoulder, and he will announce the Speaker, Mr. Rosevere. The sergeant-at-arms is Mr. Turner. So if you stand by now, in a moment you'll hear the sergeant-at-arms announce, honourable members, Mr. Speaker.
Almighty God, we humbly beseech thee to vouchsafe thy blessings upon this Parliament. Direct and prosper our deliberations to the advancement of thy glory and the true welfare of the people of Australia. Our Father which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive them that trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. Order. Honourable members, any petitions? Any notices of motions? The Honourable Minister for Immigration.
Mr. Speaker, I give notice that at the next sitting I will move that I have leave to bring in a bill for an act to make provision for and in connection with the guardianship of certain children from outside Australia. Mr. Speaker, I give notice that at the next sitting I will move that I have leave to bring in a bill for an act relating to aliens.
Any further notices of motion? Questions without notice. The Honourable Member for Kennedy.
Mr. Speaker, I desire to address a question without notice to the Right Honourable the Prime Minister. In view of the reported inflationary trend in the United States of America, and having due regard to the fact that a Wall Street crash precipitated the economic depression of 1929, will the Prime Minister make a statement before the rising of the Parliament which would indicate the possible effect of the present conditions in the United States of America on our Australian economy, and indicate whether the government has taken any action to meet any future economic...
Question by Mr. Reardon.
The Right Honourable the Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, in reply to the Honourable Member, I have, as other members have repeatedly pointed out in this House, the great dangers of the inflationary tendencies that are evident not only in America, but in other countries and to some extent in our own country as a result of a banked up purchasing power within the different communities. I don't know that I need make any lengthy statement to the House about the dangers of inflation.
Yeah.
It's quite evident, I think, what's happening, what has happened in other countries previously and what is happening to some degree in America now. The government has from time to time during the past 4 or 5 years done everything possible that it can do by various controls to prevent an ever-increasing rise in prices, which begins the spiralling, which ultimately results in inflation. I will probably, on some of the measures that are before the House before the conclusion of the present session, be able to say something further in regard to the matter, and indicate indeed what steps have already been taken, and the desirability of continuing such steps prevent inflation in this country.
The Honourable Member for Faulkner.
Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Holt.
I put a question without notice to the Right Honourable the Prime Minister. I ask him, sir, if having regard to the serious loss of production occurring throughout the Commonwealth due to the effects of widespread industrial unrest, will he convene immediately a special conference of premiers to determine a common policy and concerted action to cope with the present situation?
The Right Honourable the Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, in reply to the Honourable Member, I hadn't given any thought to the question of convening a conference of premiers to deal with this particular matter. A suggestion had been made at an earlier stage that a conference should be held between employers and employees, but due to other circumstances that arose about that time, the Minister for Labour and National Service had indicated to me that both of the parties felt that that wasn't an opportune time to have such a conference. I will discuss with him the question of whether an attempt should be made to now arrange such a conference. In regard to discussion with the Premiers, there will be a meeting of the Premiers in August for the normal meeting of the Loan Council, and I'll give consideration to the suggestion of the Honourable Member of
Parliament. Honourable Member for Grey.
Mr. Speaker, I desire to ask the Minister for Air a question without notice.
This is Mr. Russell.
If the department decided to close the air training school at Port Pirie, would the authorities then consider the converting of some of the huts for suitable homes so as to ease the acute housing shortage at Port Pirie? In support of the suggestion, I wish to point out that electric light and power is laid on, together with excellent roads, well-prepared garden space, lawns, water service, deep drainage, swimming pool, recreation grounds, etc.
The Honourable Minister for Air.
Mr. Speaker, in answer to the Honourable Member for Grey, I would like to say that the practice with regard to huts, when they become surplus to Royal Australian Air Force requirements, is to hand them over to the Disposals Commission, and that body decides what will be done with them. But in view of the suggestions which are contained in the Honourable Member's question, I undertake to have the matter examined and furnish him with a reply at a later stage.
The Right Honourable Leader of the Country Party.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to ask the Right Honourable the Prime Minister a question without notice. In view, sir, of the fact that the Communist Party's domination of some of the largest trade unions has resulted in major industrial upheavals, will the Prime Minister now consider introducing legislation requiring all trade unions to lodge with the Registrar of the Arbitration Court complete lists of their members to provide that ballots be taken by the Registrar to fill unpaid executive positions? If not, what action does the Prime Minister intend to take to ensure that the leadership of unions reflects the opinion of the members?
Colonel Eric Campbell.
Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, in regard to certain suggested proposals that the Right Honourable Leader of the Country Party has mentioned, namely the failure of correct addresses, now that's a matter that I think consideration will probably be given to when a proposed amended Arbitration Act is being given thought by the Governor. Regarding the matter of what constitutes unions dominated by communists, I'm inclined to think that although it's perfectly true that in some cases some of the leaders of the members of the Communist Party who are leaders of unions admit that they are communists, it certainly can't be said that the great body of unionists are dominated by members of the Communist Party. Now the Honourable Member has only got to have a look at who are the leaders and secretaries of some of the great unions of Australia, I think, to ascertain at once that the membership or the executive officers do not comprise a majority of communists. The impression seems to be, from what I gather from the Honourable Member, that if there is one member of an executive, a communist, an admitted communist, that he dominates the whole organisation. Personally, I don't believe that is true, and I have any amount of unions that can be pointed to indicate that the great majority of the executives are not members of the Communist Party, or not even in sympathy with the Communists.
Oh, speak it,
Mr. Speaker, I wish to ask the
This is Mr. Langtree.
I wish to ask the Minister, is it a fact that the last previous conference, when the present pre-stabilisation plan was discussed, that all state premiers were prepared to accept the present plan and pass legislation to that effect? Two, is it also a fact that the Wheat Growers Federation, held in Sydney on the 11th of December 1945, discussed the present plan with your department and finally agreed for 45-46 harvests to be included in the present five-year plan?
The Honourable Minister for Commerce and Agriculture.
Mr. Speaker, in reply to the Honourable Member's question, it is a fact that there was complete agreement at the Premier's Conference with the suggested wheat stabilisation plan. It's also a fact that the 1945-46 inclusion of the present crop in the stabilisation plan was agreed to and submitted to me by the President of the Wheat Growers Federation in Sydney in December.
I ask the Minister, is the government legally able to enter into a long-term contract for the sale of wheat before the Wheat Stabilisation Bill becomes law? And I ask, finally, if a sale has been made at 5 9 pence per bushel FOB, at a time when the Australian Wheat Board's price for bagged wheat to UNRA
and the London Food Council is 10 and 4 halfpenny per bushel bag basis FOB, then does the government intend to make good to the Australian farmers the difference between the normal parity price and this lower price at which a reputed sale has been made to New Zealand?
Honourable Minister for Commerce and Agriculture.
Mr. Scully.
I reply to the Deputy Leader of the Country Party. I would ask him to put that speech of his upon the notice paper.
I desire to ask the Minister for Trade for Commerce and Agriculture a question without notice.
This is Mr. Williams.
Is the Minister aware of the discontent prevailing in the poultry farming industry as a result of the unsatisfactory price fixed for eggs? Having regard to the representations recently made by me to the Minister and also to the Minister for Trade and Customs, will the Minister undertake to confer with his colleague, the Minister for Trade and Customs, with a view to arriving at some arrangement satisfactory to the producers and so keep up production?
Honourable Minister for Commerce and Agriculture.
Mr. Speaker, in reply to the Honourable Member, it is true that the Honourable Member has made quite a number of representations to me on behalf of the egg producers of New South Wales for a conference to be held by me and the Department of Trade and Customs, who controls prices. And I have done that on former occasions, and I will also undertake to do it as he requests on this occasion. But I just want to state that the representations were made to me quite recently by a deputation of the poultry producers of Newcastle and the Northern Districts by their representatives of their organisations, and they made a similar request. But what I did find on investigation and by the comments made by the representatives of that deputation, that those men which were being victimised by merchants who were selling them feed, different brands of poultry feed, mixtures, at an entirely enhanced figure, altogether over and above the cost of the original feed that constituted those particular mixtures. And I feel that where the poultry farmers are getting feed at a reasonable cost and getting it direct, then they would not be in the same parlous position as they are owing to the particular price at this time of the season.
Member for Morton.
I desire to ask the Right Honourable the Minister for the Army a question without notice.
This is Mr. Francis.
Has the Minister seen the statement in today's Fifth Weekly that although he has stated that discharge certificates issued to deserters would be endorsed to show that they are being discharged for disciplinary reasons, this was not being done, and deserters are still being issued with clean discharges if they apply for them? Is it further a fact that no new instruction has yet been issued to countermand the original GRO, which said that all illegal absentees prior to the 30th of December 1945 would be discharged forthwith? Will the Minister now inform the House what is the real position regarding deserters?
Right Honourable Minister for the Army.
Mr. Ford again.
I haven't seen the allegations in Smith's Weekly, but I do know that the Chief of the General Staff, General Sturdy, assured me that all certificates of discharge would be endorsed to indicate that the deserter was being discharged because of illegal absenteeism. And I shall take the matter up further with the Chief of the General Staff to see whether these additional allegations are true or not. The Honourable Gentleman can rest assured that the decision made by the government will be carried out, and I shall ask for an explanation as to the truthfulness or otherwise of these further allegations.
Honourable Member for Hunter.
Speaker, I desire to ask the Minister for Interior a question. without notice.
Question by Mr. James.
The police department has leased many of its properties to private enterprise which are non-rated. I refer to properties Drillalls around Hunter and Newcastle division. Does he think it fair that these lessees should have disadvantage over cooperative societies and other private enterprise? Is it also a fact that the Commonwealth Bank makes ex gratia payments equivalent to rental to local governing bodies? If this is so, will his department make similar payments to the local governing authorities who are losing rates?
The Honourable Minister for the Interior.
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Speaker, it is a fact that a number of Commonwealth properties have been leased to private enterprise. For the Honourable Member's benefit, I would advise that the Constitution provides that Commonwealth property shall not be rated. There are, however, instances where lessees have undertaken to comply with the rates imposed by various local governing authorities, but I am doubtful as to whether there is any legal authority for the imposition of such rates. However, I will have the question examined and supply the Honourable Member with a full and complete answer.
The Honourable Member for New England.
Mr. Speaker, I desire to ask the Minister for Works and Housing a question without notice.
Mr. Abbott.
I desire to ask the Minister whether he has seen a statement in today's Sydney Morning Herald by Mr. Fred Thomas, Secretary of the Builders Labourers Union, which is reported to have said that many housing projects were being run unofficially by strong communist controlled cells, and that he, Mr. Thomas, was in possession of the names of the men and details of the jobs. In view of this and Mr. Thomas's further statement that communists and communist union officials were guilty of actions calculated to delay the building of homes, and that foremen and leading hands appointed by Mr. McGurr from lists supplied by the union for party purposes were stirring up strife among the men, I desire to ask the Minister whether he will have an inquiry made into the truth of Mr. Thomas's statements, and if communists and communist sympathisers are acting as alleged, whether he will take steps to have them removed from the positions they now hold and from employment by the housing authorities.
The Honourable Minister for Works and Housing.
Mr. Lazzarini.
In New England, I have not seen the statement. I was too busy this morning to read the Sydney Morning Herald. From the question as I got it, it seems to me that it's purely a matter concerned with the State Housing Authority, and over which the State Housing Authority has jurisdiction, and not myself. I would advise the Honourable Gentleman to address the question to the authority that can deal with it.
Mr. Speaker, I desire to ask a question to the Minister representing the Minister for Customs.
Mr. McLeod.
Is it a fact that all states have passed legislation requiring the labelling of locally made cloth? Are Commonwealth regulations required to enforce labelling of imported cloth? If so, is the Minister taking appropriate action?
The Honourable Minister representing the Minister for Trade and Customs.
Speaker, in reply to the Honourable Member, I shall confer with my colleague, the Minister for Trade and Customs, and furnish the Honourable Gentleman with the information he desires as soon as possible.
The Honourable Member for Gippsland.
Mr. Speaker, I should like to ask a question of the Right Honourable the Prime Minister without notice.
Mr. Bowden.
The question, sir, is this. Has the Prime Minister received any representations from the Premier of Victoria, Mr. Kane, requesting that Victoria should be represented on the Australian Aluminium Commission? If so, will he give the House details of the negotiations and inform the House of the action he proposes to take to meet Mr. Kane's wishes?
The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, I have received a communication from Mr. Kane, the Premier of Victoria, regarding the matter of the Aluminium Commission. My recollection is that it's only arrived at a very recent date. I haven't been able to give consideration to the request that he makes in that letter, but I'll do so as early as possible, and I'll inform the Honourable Member of the result of my examination.
Mr. Speaker, Mr. Speaker, I desire to ask the Minister representing the Postmaster General the question now, matters.
Well, this is Mr. Bryce.
I want to ask him now that it has been decided to broadcast parliamentary debates. Will the Minister give favourable consideration to the issuing of a booklet similar to that issued in New Zealand to all Bryce's listeners, setting out the procedure of Parliament and the names and positions of the various members of the House, so that the listeners will have a complete understanding of the debates?
Honourable Minister representing the Postmaster General.
Mr. Cole.
Mr. Speaker, I shall ask the Postmaster General to deal sympathetically with the request of the Honourable Member for Burke. If we can't have all the material prepared in this short session during which we are now passing, we'll take the matter up when we are the government after the election.
Speaker, I desire to direct a question to the Honourable Minister for Commerce and Agriculture. Is the Minister in a position to make a statement to the House concerning the future of the apple and pear acquisition scheme? Is he in a position to say whether a decision has been made as to whether the scheme will operate for another term?
That was Mr.
Guy. Mr. Commerce and Agriculture.
Mr. Scully.
Largely the Honourable Member's question, I'm not in a position to make a statement.
The Honourable Member for Fremantle.
I desire to ask the Minister of Post-War Reconstruction.
Now this is Mr. Beasley.
Has the recruitment of staff for the Commonwealth Office of Education been completed? Has the office commenced educational research? In particular, has it commenced research into the educational needs of the several states?
The Honourable Minister for Post-War Reconstruction.
Mr. Deadman.
Mr. Speaker, in reply to the Honourable Member's question, the staffing of the Office of Education has not yet been completed. The question of research into the requirements of state education departments and the assistance which might be rendered under certain circumstances to state governments to undertake educational activities is at present under consideration.
Honourable Member for Bendigo.
Speaker, I wish to address the question without notice to the Right Honourable the Prime Minister. I wish to ask the Prime Minister if, in view of the fact that the government has a cabinet minister in Mr. Beasley in London, has the Prime Minister any information to give the House as to when the Minister for External Affairs, Dr. Abbott, will next visit Australia to interest himself in the affairs of Australia rather than the affairs of Spain and other enemy countries, and opposing the wishes of the British and American delegation?
Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, yes, I have a completely clear mind on when the Minister for External Affairs should come back to Australia. Well, I just want to say this in passing, that it does seem to me that in this country there is a feeling, at least among some people, that this country ought not to be represented at all in the deliberation of world affairs. As a matter of fact, we find from time to time that if ministers are not abroad and representing this country's important conference, there's a great deal of criticism. When we do arrange for a minister to be abroad, who's completely capable of dealing with the general international problems that arise from day to day, there's also a violent criticism from, first of all, people who want to use the argument for political purposes, and in other cases because of professional jealousy. The original intention when the Minister for External Affairs was to go abroad was that he was to attend the peace conference. The Minister of External Affairs was anxious to come back as soon as ever I indicated as leader of the government that that was desired. I did feel that if possible, Australia ought to have two ministers at the peace conference.